From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, bringing the Capitol to you and talking about the issues that matter most every week from a biblical perspective. And on today's show, we'll talk about back to school month and why a handful of students in Maryland won't be returning to their Christian school, and a really important story. Plus, we'll also review five religious freedom rights in public school that every student, teacher, and parent needs to know, as well as what we can all learn about handling criticism and the importance of free speech from Vice President Mike Pence. Well, it is back to school season. It's an exciting time of year, and this month, millions of students are returning to school. Not among them, however, are a handful of students in Maryland who won't be able to return to their Christian school. Why? The Christian school's Christian stance on marriage has cost them its place in a voucher program. When the state of Maryland found out that Bethel Christian Academy affirms the biblical view of marriage in its student handbook, officials cut the Baltimore area school from a state-sponsored school voucher program, arguing it practiced sexual discrimination. Now the principal from the school says at least six students no longer can afford to attend the K-12 school. The school's principal told the Daily Signal in a phone interview that in addition to the six students who were unable to attend this past school year, others likely were interested in enrolling but didn't after finding out they couldn't use a voucher to cover tuition costs. So you have students and families who are choosing. They want to send their children to this Christian school, probably in large part because of the school's foundational beliefs. And now there are students who are unable to attend. They can't go to the school of their choice because even though the state has a voucher program which gives funds directly to students' families in order to go to the school of their choice because this school upholds Christian views and Christian beliefs, they got kicked out of the program. And as a result, less students are able to attend the school of their choice. And Maryland is one of 14 states that provide a school choice program for K-12 students in which funds go towards eligible students in the form of a voucher that can be put toward the family's school of choice. And in Maryland, students can receive up to $4,400 each school year to use towards tuition. Nebraska is not among those 14 states that enables school choice. In fact, we're one of the only few remaining states in the entire country without any publicly supported school choice options. And otherwise, we don't have school choice. You can only go to the school of your choice if you can afford it. And this Christian school in Maryland has been a part of Maryland's state-sponsored voucher program for 2 years and has received approximately $102,000 and total aid from the state, which is, again, it's not given to the school, it's given to the families who use it to pay tuition. However, not only has Maryland now kicked Bethel Christian School out of the program, they are demanding that the school repay the more than $100,000 in funding. But the school is fighting back. Alliance Defending Freedom has taken up their case and is now suing the state of Maryland for targeting the school's religious values. Now, of course, it's important to note that state law in Maryland says the state cannot require a religious entity to change its policy or change its beliefs. But in order to participate in this program and be treated equally, or at least not hostily by the state, that's exactly what they would have to do. And of course, the state also does not require students to attend any particular school through the voucher program, just as no student is forced to attend a certain school or accept its particular religious views or beliefs, which is in fact the purpose of school choice. You have that choice and that freedom in education to pick the school that is right for you and your family. And who this hurts when states do this, or like in Nebraska, who doesn't provide real school choice options, who it hurts is low-income families. We should be supporting choice and freedom in education, because we all know that a child's education is foundational to the success that they will have later in life. And it's in their best interest to learn in environments and through programs that meet their individual needs. Parents know this, families know this, and the state shouldn't stand in their way. And that's what we're seeing with this case in Maryland. And too often, parents are unable to seek the education that's right for their child solely because of financial barriers. And right now in Nebraska, many people give generously to private scholarship foundations in order to hand out and distribute scholarships to qualified students with financial needs to attend a non-public school. But for those who seek this help, there often aren't enough resources to meet the demand. For example, in the 2018 through 2019 school year, Children's Scholarship Fund of Omaha had 439 qualified students left unfunded due to lack of scholarship money. And earlier this year, the state legislature attempted to rectify this situation when they considered a bill supported by the Nebraska Family Alliance to incentivize increase given to private scholarship organizations through a tax credit scholarship. However, there were not enough votes to overcome a filibuster, which is really sad because it hurts kids, and in particular, it hurts kids from low-income families, because this is not about taking anything away from public schools. This isn't a public school versus private school debate. It's about helping children and families, and more scholarships for students from low-income families to receive a private education reduces the burden on not only our public schools, but also on taxpayers. For example, a recent analysis of Iowa's tax credit scholarship program, which they have had in place since 2006, showed a net state savings of about $12 million every year. And we are pushing for the same bill to come back next year because the state needs to support a parent's right to decide where his or her child is best suited to receive a well-rounded, challenging, and fulfilling education, be it in a public or private school, regardless of the family's income. This is because every child should have the opportunity to attend a school that best suits their individual needs, regardless of their income. And parents should have more control over their own child's education than their zip code and the government. The legislation in Nebraska that would establish the tax credit scholarship program is Legislative Bill 670, the Opportunity Scholarships Act. It was introduced by Senator Lou Anne Linehan from Elkhorn. She prioritized it. It was debated by the legislature for 3 hours, and then they moved on without a vote. And that is due to a policy implemented by the Speaker of the legislature, where if a bill is being filibustered, it gets 3 hours of debate time, and then they move on, and it can be rescheduled if the bill sponsor can demonstrate that they have or think they have the 33 necessary votes in the legislature to overcome a filibuster. So the bill is not dead, it's still alive, and we are hoping that it will be given another chance because it deserves it in our state legislature next year. The legislature will reconvene in January, and they will start a 60 working day session. So make sure your state senator knows you want them, your representative, to support school choice in Nebraska to help low-income families be able to send their child to the school of their choice. And again, when a child is educated in an environment where they thrive, rather than just get by or fall behind, everyone benefits, the child, the family, and both public and private schools. So contact your state senator, ask them to support LB 670. You can find all of the information about this bill, about the scholarship tax credit program, and how to contact your state senator and what to say at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Someone who knows a thing or two about taking a stand for faith in the public square is Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. And earlier this year, in really bizarre fashion, his wife came under intense criticism, not even the vice president, but it was his wife who was criticized by some in the national media for teaching at a Christian school for teaching art class, which, I mean, I think it's pretty neat that the spouse of the vice president of the United States is still making time to teach children in her local community by teaching art classes at a school. But because it was at a Christian school and the school holds Christian beliefs, she came under attack for being an art teacher. And just earlier this week, Vice President Pence took some time with our friends and allies at Alliance Defending Freedom to share some words of encouragement. He sat down with ADF President, CEO, and General Counsel Michael Ferris to answer a few questions about religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and faith. He also specifically touched on handling criticism and incivility, as well as an important lesson on the need to protect free speech, even if it's speech we don't like. And I found what the vice president had to say to be very impactful and profound. So here is what Vice President Pence had to say on handling criticism and the importance of free speech.
Mr. Vice President, you receive frequent critiques from some in the media, some pundits, and some people who just don't like what you're doing politically. But our team is also under a regular attack from our critics. You handle this all with so much grace and character. It's inspiring to me and to our whole team. What advice can you give to us about how to handle these kinds of attacks when we're faced with them?
Well, first, I'm very humbled by your comment, Mike. I appreciate it very much. I would just say maybe a couple of things. Number one is spend more time on your knees than on the internet.
Is that okay?
I mean, you know, we're, as a Christian believer, we're charged to pray for our loved ones, but also pray for our enemies. And that you have lots of opportunities in politics to do that. But I would say that that forgiveness is a great gift. And my wife and I literally try and work through forgiving people who might speak woefully against us or might mischaracterize who we are or what our family is all about. I'm incredibly proud of my wife. She's a great second lady. She's also a great art teacher at a Christian school here in the Washington area. And I was so impressed when Karen, someone on television said when it became kind of a thing, I don't know, some of you mentioned it to me before, but it became a thing that she was teaching at a Christian school that held Christian beliefs. And
shocking as that may seem.
Yeah. Yes. Karen just took it all in stride, and I was incredibly proud of her, but it was a remarkable thing. I remember I saw one commentator on television that said, well, the vice president should have assumed this was going to become controversial when his wife started teaching art at a Christian school. We honestly didn't see that one coming. And our kids went to this school. When I was in Congress, our kids all went to this Christian school. They went to public high school. My son's a Marine Corps pilot and married. My daughter's an author, and my other daughter's going to finish law school next year, so they're doing great. We're proud of all of them. But I think a lot of it is just extending grace. And finally, I just say just focusing on the cause. You know, I really do think it's important that we stay focused on things that are more important than ourselves, that are more important than any intermittent controversy that might arise. And for me, that's about being a part of an administration standing next to a president that's rebuilding our military, who's revived our economy, who's appointing a historic number of conservatives to our federal courts, who's standing, as I said, for our first freedom, for religious liberty, for the right to life. And that's, I get up every day and I just, I feel incredibly blessed to be a small part of an administration that's making America great again. So focus on the positive.
We're living in an age where freedom of speech isn't valued the way it used to be. Political correctness is becoming more and more aggressive, and the efforts to silence, belittle, and demonize anyone who disagrees with a particular agenda seems to run contrary to the central truth of the First Amendment. We really appreciate your administration's strong stance for free speech, especially on college campuses. What other thoughts would you share with us on the importance of free speech?
Well, I think the president's made it very, very clear. We've sent a very strong message to campuses, universities, and colleges around the country that the freedom of speech is enshrined in the First Amendment of the Constitution, and we expect our institutions of learning to respect that and respect diverse views on our campuses and create an environment that's conducive to learning. I must tell you, I feel somewhat encouraged, not just because of the strong stand the president has taken, but because of the courageous stand that we've seen young people taking on campuses around the country, challenging these, what do they call them, safe zones that emerged, challenging speech codes that have emerged on campus. All of those things are antithetical to the process of learning. In fact, I hold the view that when you send your kids to college, the hope is that they would be exposed to the broadest range of ideas, and then they can learn to discern as they prepare to be adults going forward in the world, not only deciding what they think, but hearing all sides. And yet we've seen increasingly, insular environment created on campuses. The encouraging thing, Mike, is I see it's not just conservatives that are speaking out against this now. It's actually very encouraging that many liberals are recognizing the political correctness and the reality of speech codes and censorship on our campuses. And so I know ADF has been involved in that debate, involved in litigation, and I want to thank you for that. It's absolutely essential that the rising generation experience freedom in their college education so that they can carry a love and an appreciation for freedom into their lives as citizens. And so keep up the great work. We'll keep standing strong. We really do believe it's absolutely essential, not just to the process of learning, but also the people understanding citizenship and learning to be a citizen in a free society and what freedom looks like. You know, I'm reminded, my kids often quote me, whenever I was governor or vice president, or, you know, I see somebody waving an unflattering sign, some people shouting something out. I always look at my kids and I say, that's what freedom looks like. That's what freedom sounds like, right? And the ability to disagree, the ability to be critical of people that are in public life, that's at the very center of what the people who founded this country had in mind and has been preserved through the generations, and we have to make sure it's preserved on the campuses of America.
That was Vice President Mike Pence with Alliance Defending Freedom CEO and President Michael Ferris. And I just love what the Vice President had to share during that interview, especially at the beginning when he talked about the importance of spending more time on our knees than on the internet. And I think that's a great reminder for all of us. And, you know, a question we get asked a lot at Nebraska Family Alliance during this time of year as students are going back to school is, what are my child's rights in a public school? So to answer that question, here are five religious freedom rights that every student has in public schools. First is the right to pray. Every student has the right to pray, discuss their faith, read scripture, distribute literature, and invite fellow students to join their religious group as long as it is voluntary, non-disruptive, or coercive, and it occurs during non-instructional time. So essentially the same as any other student group. As long as it is student-led and being driven by the student, that student and other students have the right to pray and discuss their faith and read the Bible in school, just like other groups or other activities can, as well, as long as it's not disrupting class time. So number one is the right to pray. Number two is the right to express religious views. Students have the right to express their religious views during a class discussion or as part of a written assignment or art activity, as long as it is relevant to the subject under consideration and meets the assignment requirements. So if it falls under the right type of category or on what they're learning or discussing in class, students can bring religion into the discussion or the assignment and express religious views. That is their right. Number three is the right to form religious clubs. Secondary school students have the right to form faith-based and religious clubs if the school receives federal funds and allows other non-curriculum related clubs to meet during non-instructional time. They must be student-led, and student religious clubs may have access to school facilities and media on the same basis that other non-curriculum related clubs do, so they have to be treated equally. Number four is the right to wear religious attire. Students have the right to wear religious attire required by their religion, such as a headscarf or yarmulkes, and importantly, students may also display religious messages on clothing or jewelry to the same extent that other messages are permitted. So they can't prohibit a student from wearing a shirt that has a cross on it, for example, or from wearing cross jewelry to school. And number five is the right not to be required to violate their religious beliefs. Students have the right to not be required to violate their own religious beliefs. Students also may be able to be excused from lessons that are objectionable to the student or the student's parents on religious or other contentious grounds. And that's something that's really important for parents to know. The bottom line is that your students' rights don't end when they walk out their front door. Even when attending a public school, every student has the right to pray, the right to express religious views, the right to form religious clubs, the right to wear religious attire, and the right not to be required to violate their religious beliefs. You can find more information and free resources on students and parents' rights in public schools at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our e-network so you can stay up to date on all of the latest information happening locally as well in our nation's capital and how it will impact you and your family. And as always, you can subscribe to the Capital Connection for free and never miss an episode. Simply search for Capital Connection on the podcast app on your phone. That's all the time we have for today. We'll be back next week with more information and updates on engaging government and culture. I'm your host, Nate Groz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.